Okay, so welcome back, everyone, to the Feast recap that has somehow gone on longer than Feast itself. Once again, I'm your host, Matt Number Two, Blue Armor on the forums, and then joining with me is the same crew as part one. We've got Noah, Wilson, Jock, Michael, and Bina. As we continue our discussion. So now we're moving on to part two. We'll discuss two of my favorite characters, Sansa and Arya. And then we somehow got talking on Dorne again. So Arya is kind of thrown in the middle here. And same people are back, same crew. If you're still listening, thank you for joining us once again. But I feel like in order of importance, we should. That's me projecting my personal. Arya and Sansa are two of my favorite POVs. So Sansa's chapters, ever since she left King's Landing and is in the Eyrie, are fascinating with her maturing as a woman and as a political schemer. And I love Arya's faceless man training stuff. Although the most interesting chapter of hers is her final dance chapter, which will be coming up in the reread soon. But there's still some good stuff, and also we get to see Braavos as a location is very interesting to me. One of the places I've always wanted to see, similar to what I hope seeing Old Town would be like in Winds. So what are y'all thoughts?
Start with Sansa, shall we?
Yeah, because she's my favorite character, and I'm here for Sansa, my queen.
Is she truly Bina? I don't know how to feel about Sansa, book Sansa anyway. Like she is becoming, what was the word you used, Matt? I think political schema. And that makes me both excited and nervous because it seems she's going to start playing the game. It seems she's going to be, not just good at it, but like super, influential in how things go down.
And why is it a bad thing?
Oh, it's not a bad thing.
We have a Stark girl who has the wisdom, the kind of the cunning of Littlefinger, the beauty to manipulate, who is a calm, clear head, who's gone through real trauma, has emerged wiser with more self-awareness. I think she's going to be a force to be reckoned with. I'm loving every minute of this. We're on the cusp of truly great Sansa chapters.
Do you think the trauma so far has been her defining, like what defines her growth? Because I know Joffrey was horrible, but I still think that what transforms her into this very powerful key player in the game is yet to come in the books. And I wonder if that's going to happen in the Vale, or if she does get back north and then something traumatic happens. Because now we see how well she can handle Robin and how courteous she is, and how she sees Littlefinger playing her game, and she's calm and composed and playing along. But I still think that something, severe is waiting for Sansa, either in the Vale with Harry the heir. And that could turn her into like super ruthless Littlefinger type.
I think she already is super ruthless, honestly. I mean, I just think that you can be too reductive about these things. And I think, this was a criticism of the show, or one of the lines in the show, but I think it was an overdone criticism that all the things you experience and that happen to you obviously contribute to your evolution. But I feel that Sansa is not specifically the product of the attempted rape in the mob scene in King's Landing or seeing her father's head chopped off. She's far more at this point, in a sense, a product of the grooming that Littlefinger, the very disturbing grooming that Littlefinger has done, and seeing the weirdness and twistedness of Lysa Arryn. And whatever happens to her in this, quote-unquote controversial scene that's coming in the next book will be, of course, an experience that she's reacted to. But I would hate for people... I don't think George will do this. I would hate for this to be this sort of pivotal turning point in her character. Actually, I think it's been a far better written, more slow-burning, maturing. And it shows how impact, you can positively mature based on what you've experienced. And I love that in Sansa's character. So, of course, that's going to add an element to it. But I would hate for that to be the dominant element, or to cause a sudden turn left, a fork in her character development.
Yeah, I view it as a culmination of the various things she's observed in King's Landing and the way she's looked at behavioral interactions. And I also just feel from a narrative standpoint, she's suffered enough, and it would just be gratuitous if she went through even more trauma. I feel like George is smart enough not to go there.
I think she's already... Go ahead, man.
No. I wonder what her motive is, or if one will come to the surface. So far, it's been, you know, trying to get home, right? And maybe, you know, just surviving. And she's getting really smart about doing that and dealing with all the things happening around her and, you know, being very cognizant as to how the world works. Happy days. I think that, or I wonder if she will get this, you know, again, another turning point that makes her focus on something, and that something being the Iron Throne. So far, Sansa doesn't strike me as a power-hungry person. I don't think she's playing the game to get power. I don't think power is one of the things she wants. She's just trying to survive. But it feels like she's gathering skills, you know, and she's going to use it for something. What that something is, I don't know.
I would add a subtle difference, a subtle embellishment on what you just said, which is I don't think she's interested in power for its own end, as some people are. But I do think she's interested or is starting to understand that the only way to be truly safe is to have a measure of political power. And that if you don't have it, you're vulnerable. And I suspect that the end game for her is not to want the Iron Throne, but to, if she wants Winterfell back, to maybe have to overshoot in what she wants in order to secure what she needs. In other words, that it's not in an end, as an end for itself. And in that, she's a very interesting power player. She's a very interesting player of the Game of Thrones, because she doesn't actually, I don't think Sansa, even at the end of this, is going to want to rule qua ruling. I think she's going to want to create an environment where she has a safe haven and a region where she is in control and her family's in control.
She might end up viewing it as a necessity.
Means to an end, which is very different, isn't it? It's very different to Dany. So Dany is a very interesting character who's also experienced deep trauma of experiencing the loss of parents and sexual exploitation. And a lot of the stuff that Sansa goes through, you can see parallels with Dany. But Dany wants the throne because she feels entitled to it. She doesn't want it because that's the way of stopping being sold to a man as his wife. Sansa's in a very different position. She doesn't see herself as entitled to the throne. She sees herself as entitled to be part of the family that's in Winterfell, but not even for herself. I mean, we've never seen Sansa, even at this point, where with brothers dying left and right, thinking of herself as, God, I could be the heir of Winterfell. So
that is true. That's very true.
And that's important. And it speaks to a certain measure of humility and integrity that she's not grasping for power in the way that so many other people are in this story.
That is true. Well, I can see why you like her so much now, Bina.
I've spent way too much of my life thinking about Sansa.
I mean, I couldn't have, for the better, I couldn't have articulated that any better than you just did. If this rumored thing, if there's some danger that she experiences in the coming of Winds, whether it be through Harry or through Shadrick trying to kidnap her or whatever, I don't see it as like another major turning point for her. It's just kind of another hiccup in a continuation of her development as a character. And I obviously don't think it'll be successful. I think whatever danger she experienced will be stopped by Lothar Brune or by someone else or whatever.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's cool to think that Sir Shadrick might be a badass, but he'll probably be put down pretty swiftly.
Yeah, I mean, he's an opportunist, not really a badass.
Well, Brienne rates him, and I trust Brienne.
Oh, really? I guess, yeah, I didn't really
remember too. That much. I trust Brienne.
Yeah, but
Brienne we trust.
We do. But,
yeah, there's certainly other capable people in the Eyrie right now, too. But yeah, no, I'm really excited for the upcoming tournament or whatever that is going to be hosted in the Eyrie in Winds.
Yeah.
Just a good old fashioned tourney for political means. We
haven't had a tourney in ages.
I know, we need to get back to that. Some good old fashioned political manipulation.
And dancers. I really liked it that Sansa was dancing in the preview chapter. That was nice. It reminded me of Pride and Prejudice, the 1995 version, where they have those really nice dances contrasted with tense discussions. I was just like, that's cool. That's great.
I was thinking of the Favorite has such a hilarious and great like ball dance scene.
Oh, with Nicholas Hoult almost like quasi-Russian Cossack dancing slash into the room, and then the one where Rachel Weisz is picked up and sort of bodily turned horizontally around.
He just is just randomly injected like modern dance techniques into this period film. It was a lot of fun. Maybe my favorite scene in the movie. Yeah, what else you got?
Yeah.
Well, firstly, my first question, who do you think is going to live longer, Sweet Robin or Walder Frey?
Walder Frey has to live long enough to see the doom of his family.
Yeah, there are a fair amount more Frey. There are several more Freys that need to die before Walder kicks the bucket.
I think they'll both die in wins.
It's certainly possible. I think for sure Sweet Robin is a goner by the end of wins. Walder Frey, we'll see. It depends on a lot. Just because, I mean, obviously the main antagonist there is the Brotherhood, but their goals are kind of like they seem to just want to kill as many of the lesser Freys as possible before they go after Walder himself.
Yeah, that's right. It seems Robin needs to die soon so that tournament can have more significance if Harry the Heir becomes, you know, Harry the Lord, perhaps. So, bye-bye, Robin.
Right, yeah, the goal is to kind of name him the official, I guess, yeah, have like an official naming of the heir, probably, and garner support behind him before Robin falls.
Yeah, I think so. Depends on who you think is going to do Walder Frey in. I guess that depends. If it's the Brotherhood, then yeah, maybe he'll wait a bit, but otherwise, Robin is definitely next on the list.
It's got to be Stoneheart. It's got to be.
Dude, that's one character I don't know where that's going. Like, I don't know, truly. It's
Do you
it's
care, though? I mean, are you invested in the Stoneheart story and the Brotherhood?
If you think who's on her list, then yeah. You know, if who she has a grudge against and if those people are out, what that means for the story, yeah. I mean, for her...
Good point.
Yeah.
Two of our favorite characters currently rest in the palm of her hand, really?
Yes.
So I think we have to, you know, at least have one eye on Stoneheart.
Yeah, I'm invested in the Brotherhood storyline, not necessarily Stoneheart herself.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see where that goes. I wonder where it ends with her. But yeah, she does have Brienne now, and I guess Jamie too, so we'll see.
Yeah, it's certainly
I love,
is one more. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I love, I have been doing a little listening to the Game of Thrones audiobook. So being at that comment about Ned running around and the whodunit really fucking hits home. But when Catelyn goes to visit Walder Frey for the first time and she thinks about roasting him over a fire, I mean, it's one of those that, you know, the deaths that everyone wants Walder Frey to die, but when it comes, might be just a bit too much, you know?
Yes, it might.
that's a good quote call out, Noah. It's been a while since I've read Game of Thrones. That's a neat little foreshadowing tidbit, possibly.
I know. There's some great nuggets in there.
Yeah.
But I guess one last thing I wanted to chat to you guys about, Rhys Sansa, is the Lord's Declarant, and if they're just kind of some bumbling fools that Littlefinger has in his back pocket. I mean, some are for sure. Or if there is a bit more of a conspiracy and they actually have, they're a bit more aware than he gives them credit for.
That's a good one. I don't know. It seems to me like the Vale is just an army that needs to be mobilized, and who's going to do it is what's significant. So if it's Littlefinger and his scheme of, you know, I still don't know what that is in the book, but I don't know that the Lords Declarant have a motive other than they're the obstacle that someone in the Vale, Littlefinger or Sansa, must overcome. Or, you know, try to work with to get that army moving. Because that Vale army seems to be the relevant thing there, I think.
Sansa will be, Sansa revealing herself will be the necessary factor that pushes the hesitant Lord's Declarant, like the Royce guy, over the line and to get on the side of Sansa and Littlefinger.
Well, so Bronze Yon, he has seen Sansa twice, I think. Once just pre-book, when he took his son Waymar to the Wall to join the Night's Watch, and then once at the Tourney of the Hand, I believe. And Sansa in book is worried that she'll be recognized, and it seems like he doesn't, and he doesn't really seem like the crafty kind of guy. But I don't know, is that, do you guys think that's a possibility that he's just keeping in his back pocket?
Yeah, that's, I think you're, it's more likely that you're right, that he's just not that sharp. But I wonder if it is that he's just, you know, he has, but he just wants to keep it to himself for now.
When he first sees Sansa in the Vale, he says, "Do I know you, child?" And Sansa says, "Oh, no, no, I'm Elaine Stone. You don't know me." But yeah, so interpret that as you will.
Yeah, I do agree that Sansa, it's possible that Sansa might be outed prematurely before she intends to declare herself. So that might be a challenge going forward in Winds.
So if I read correctly, Anya Wainwood, who is one of the Lord's Declarants, she knows who Sansa is, right?
No, none of them do.
I don't think any of them do.
I don't know. Doesn't she have an inkling? Isn't it revealed that she accepted the betrothal?
Precisely.
Why else would she let a bastard of some, you know, arsehole from the Fingers marry the heir of the Vale?
For the dowry.
Well, that was the debt.
Staggering.
Yeah. I mean, at least Littlefinger on the surface says it's because of the debt, where he essentially just bought the betrothal from Wainwood.
Without having to reveal. I feel like with Anya Wainwood, there's a touch of the Barbary Dustins about her, and she's she could be a bit of a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah. I mean, look, yeah, there's a ton of possibilities with people figuring out whether it's Wainwood, Bronzion, Miranda Royce,
Shadrick.
Yeah, obviously Shadrick has an inkling. So,
I mean, then again, if she did know, then why wouldn't she just have Littlefinger killed and declare Sansa and then take the power kind of for herself, if you see what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, this is that right there is the entire like weakness of Littlefinger's position, where I mean and just him as a character in general, where he has all this political maneuvering, but at any point someone can just decide to kill him with very little consequence, and so that's kind of the tightrope he always has to walk, and you know is eventually going to be what happens. Like someone's going to kill him, and it's just kind of, you know, waiting to see who does it.
I have a headcanon theory that when Littlefinger was arranging the marriage with Anya Wainwood, he said, "Elaine won't be a bastard the day she marries Harry," which, you know, maybe that implies, oh, she'll be legitimized, so she won't be a bastard. But yeah, Littlefinger's fun.
I imagine that he would, that was part of the thing where Littlefinger would hint at stuff. But, you know, obviously then the goal would just be to have Sweet Robin / Tommen, you know, the crown, declare her legitimate. Yeah, I mean, that would be the hint that he, the suggested thought that he would put into other people's minds.
I do think Littlefinger is smart about where he, you know, chooses to settle. In the Vale, anyone could just, like, push him out the moon door, but they are very, like, that honor they have. They're not murderers. They're not schemers. They're really wed to their honor. So Bronze Yon could have him executed, but he won't because, you know, there's no legal or moral, well, not moral, but there's no, his honor is at stake if he does that. And so with Wainwood, like, if he's bought her debt, if she kills him, you know, it could be seen as, you know, she was trying to kill her creditor, or the person who loaned, who she owes money to, which makes me think, and he made a statement in that chapter that she wouldn't make the boy wed against his will. So Elaine has to charm him. Makes me think, like, you know, she wouldn't sell the kid, even for her debt. But knowing who Sansa is, that seems more a reason she would agree to it, because it's not just a bastard's kid. It's, you know, the Stark kid. So I think maybe she does know. Whether she will tell Bronze, or maybe that becomes a factor, I think that's an open question, perhaps. Because if she does, then maybe there is a scheme, a plot the Lord's Clarence have. Otherwise, maybe they're just clueless as to what's going on.
Anyone have anything else they want to discuss with Sansa?
No, other than I'm desperately excited to see what happens next.
Yeah, she... I mean, yeah, she's pretty much the longest like wait at this point. Are there any other? I don't think there are any other characters from Feast that. Well, I guess what Sam is then the only other one.
But we've seen some of his through Jon, whereas I feel Cersei and Jaime got token chapters in Dance. That's it.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I mean, yeah, Cersei had a significant chapter in Dance. Arya gets a significant chapter in Dance. But yeah, we've been a long time for more Sansa chapters, and yeah, it can't come soon enough. All right.
I had one last thing. Sorry, mate.
Oh, nope.
Damn it.
It's a one real brief, just a little historical parallel that I kind of stumbled across between the Lords Declarant and some group called the Lords Appellant, a group of nobles in the reign of King Richard II who sought to impeach some of the king's favourites in order to restrain what was seen as a tyrannical and capricious rule. So I just thought it was pretty, that's a cool little parallel to history that George kind of picked up there.
That is like George, indeed, to model British history, indeed.
Yeah, very nice.
Anyway, that was it. Just a little thing there.
I really should read more of Stephen Atwell's stuff. He does good stuff on that.
So, question for you guys, because I forget if I know we're still on Sansa, but Arianne is not a POV, right? We get her from the captain of her father's guard. That's the POV, right?
No, she's
a POV.
Princess in the Tower is
Yes,
POV.
She is. I'm sorry.
And she's...
Yes, she is. Okay.
She's frankly the main... Like, the whole point of that is to set her up as the main point of view chapter for Dorne. And she's going to have her own chapters going forward in Winds.
Okay. Right, cool.
Like, under her own name, too. Not, like, some weird naming convention.
Yeah.
This was something we discussed in when it was that Aerys Urquhart chapter. I personally said it should have been an Arianne chapter. There's not a lot to be gained from it being Aerys.
Yeah.
And with more time, I think George might have come to that decision as well. But we'll never know.
I think Dawn does suffer from having too many insubstantial POVs rather than one consistent character that we can really empathize with and get an intricate understanding of that region from. It really suffers. Maybe it will get better in TWoW with Arianne becoming presumably the eyes on that region. But yeah, I think it's a very valid criticism.
Yeah. In retrospect, I think it just should have been all Arianne, and then I mean we do need Ariel Hotah for just in terms of seeing a couple events, and so he's kind of takes the Barristan role to Arianne's Dany in that sense. But yeah, I think the Aerys Urquhart chapter should have been switched probably.
Well, Aerys Urquhart, he just has the one chapter, right?
Isn't it too, like, isn't he have the second one too where he gets killed, or is that Arianne's as well?
No, that's Arianne's.
The one where he charges into Hotah?
Yeah, that's Arianne's, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's just the one. But I guess with Hotah, the captain of the guard, I think that's to give us an insight into Dorian Martell, and maybe his misgivings or what he's dealing with following Oberyn's death. I don't know if that will persist, but if Dorne is going to play this game in Winds, Arianne is just one piece of that puzzle, isn't she? Like, there's someone at the Citadel, and there's a whole team with Marcella, which will, I think, have an impact. So he might keep Ario moving forward.
Yeah, he definitely will.
Yeah.
I view the Sand Snakes as much more secondary to Arianne. I would definitely think of Arianne as the main, as you say, POV, and the main player who will be calling the shots for Dorne's strategies.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
And the Sand Snakes are not guaranteed. Well, I mean, granted, they all have a strong possibility that they could die, both Arianne and the Sand Snakes, as they are treading in dangerous waters going forward. But yeah. But they're they're more not one note characters, but I doubt they're going to go through much character growth, whereas Arianne is set up to go through a fair amount of character growth over the course of her chapters. All right, Arya, Faceless Men, House of Black and White. Arya is my favorite character in the story, although, you know, when it gets down to distinguishing between my favorite POVs, you know, I kind of have to go to just a technical basis where, for me, Arya is an interesting POV from the start, whereas some of the other POVs I like, you know, such as Jaime, Davos, and Sansa take a while to get going. So I'm pretty much here for everything that Arya does. I don't expect her to really have a happy ending, you know, in the end. You know, it's pretty much a 50-50 shot whether she lives or not for me. But I'm just I'm enjoying the ride to kind of see the choices this character makes. You know, I'm all up for some fun assassin training montage, and also the Faceless Men and the House of Black and White are kind of an interesting subgroup, you know, like the Faith, who, you know, have some somewhat mysterious goals, and I'm kind of curious as to how they're going to turn out and how they're going to kind of relate to the overall story going forward.
Okay, sounds good.
So what are y'all thoughts on Arya? I mean, you know, also my favorite chapter of hers is the dance one coming up with kind of revealing the blood magic involved in gaining a new face and seeing her make her first official kill. But there's, you know, there's obviously a lot of good stuff here that introduces kind of the city of Braavos and some of the mythology behind the House of Black and White.
So is that her official kill as in the merchant, or the unofficial kill, which was Dairy?
Right, that's why I said first official. Like, okay, you know, that's the first official job she's assigned to, even though obviously she has killed many people before this, and, you know, takes out Darren in over the course of Feast here. You know, that's a fun it's a fun meeting up, you know, with her running into Sam like that, you know, with a novel that has split out the characters, our POV characters, so much. It's always nice to see them running into each other and interacting.
Yeah. So I have thought about that with the both kills in Braavos. With the one with the singer, like her motives, you hear her thought process, or afterwards when she does it, she says, you know, he was a deserter, so he needs to go. It sounds like something, you know, that was instinctive for her, being a northern girl and her father doing the same thing. That just sounded, or to her, maybe that was just, you know, a clear cut, you know, you desert it, so you die, and that's that. But with the merchant or the insurer guy, I don't know what his job is, the binder or whatever he does, but she tries to reason out his own death, like, oh, he's discourteous, or he'll thank me, he's a wretched guy, so well, I'm doing him a favor. You know, she tries to negotiate her morals on this, or justify his death, which I don't know if that points to Sansa's What's wrong with me? Jeez. With Arya's descent into, or evolution into, like a cold-blooded killer, like someone who will kill just because, as opposed to, you know, as opposed to someone who would worry about why she's doing it. I don't know. If there are more deaths or more like this, like if she sticks around with the faceless guys, then maybe she'll have a few more, you know, of these jobs. Otherwise, maybe this would be like something she just will figure out she can't do, like just be a cold-blooded killer for no reason other than it's her job, you know?
Certainly that's what the Faceless Men want her to become, is this, you know, no trace of Arya Stark, and she is just a faceless man. But I've always thought that she is going to break with them and she will regain her Arya identity, because the alternative is just a crappy story. So there's a schism coming up with her and the Faceless Men.
Yeah, also there's no like, it's also born out of plot necessity too. Like, she has to get back to Westeros and interact with the stories going on there, you know, therefore without the 5-year gap, she just doesn't have time to go through the complete Faceless Man training. Although it's rather unpredictable as to how she's going to get out of that without like being hunted down and killed for it.
Yeah, severe consequences in the future for these actions.
Indeed. I don't know if that split with the Faceless Men is imminent or if it adds anything to her story. I've never quite been able to figure out why she's there, other than that she had met Jack and Hagar like books ago, and then it just seems like, okay, she needs to go somewhere, so there you go. I wonder if this is supposed to tell us something about the kind of person she will become, and if we will truly get Arya Stark back, or we'll just get some kind of living embodiment of, I don't know, death, roaming Braavos or coming back to Westeros. With Arya, it seems like she loses a part of herself every day and then gains something else. Like she gains other skills and insight, well, not insight, but other skills that make her kind of dangerous. So with Arya, it's hard to tell as to where she's going right now. In Feast, anyway. I think Dance does give us more. But in Feast, she's in Braavos, but we don't know yet what that means for her character altogether.
Well, she says in her first Feast chapter that she's going to the House of Black and White because she has nowhere else to go. And she thinks to herself, if the captain asked me what I wanted to do, I'd say, just take me with you on your ship and that'll be my new life. So I wouldn't say this is necessarily something Arya is drawn to, but it's just something that's coming out of necessity.
Yeah.
I'm sure the revenge appeals to her. But again, that's not what the Faceless Men want. They don't like the idea of revenge necessarily from the Faceless Men themselves.
That's a very specific piece of information that occurs in the Dance chapter, where she attends that meeting and they have a target to deal out, and they go around the table specifically asking, like, you know, do you know this man? It's like, I can't do this because I know him, but they get around to a person that says, you know, I do not know this man, so I will do this job. It's a very important core principle of their line of work that's kind of revealed in that. Arya has to come back again, you know, no matter how far down the line she goes. The personality of Arya Stark obviously has to win out to provide a emotionally satisfying conclusion to her story arc, whether she lives or not. It's her journey is going to be, you know, how she reacts to this change and how she's going to fight it in the end and what she's going to choose to do. And kind of going along with Michael's point, then yeah, probably a reason for her to finally choose to return to Westeros will be kind of hearing updated information that some of her family is still alive and needs help.
And as we know from the end of A Dance with Dragons, fake Arya is coming with Justin Massey to Braavos, which will be interesting.
What?
Yeah. So Jane Poole was rescued and Stannis sends her to the wall. And then he sends Justin Massey and says, all right, go to Braavos, get me sellswords and take Arya with you.
Oh, shit.
Hello.
I completely missed that. Like, I knew Justin Massey was going, what the fuck? How have I never heard of this before?
Yeah. This is new info, dude.
God, we're some fucking idiots.
Isn't it amazing you can read these books so many times and still be surprised by them?
Right, yeah. I consider my knowledge pretty good, too. Shit.
We know nothing, my friend. It seems. Yeah. So this means that this could be the way Arya returns, right? If she knows this whole face swapping thing. This could be that's a game changer. I was gonna ask you guys.
She returns as Jane Poole pretending to be herself.
That will throw everyone into for a loop, yeah. They'd be like crazy. I was gonna ask you guys, do you think, because Braavos all of a sudden seems to be like the meeting point for all these important people, like Sam gets there with Aemon and there's talk of Daenerys and, you know, all these Kingslanders are coming. Do you think Arya being there with her, you know, learn three new things every day, you know, curriculum, whether or not she will all of a sudden become this, you know, person who knows so much that Westeros needs or that affects Westeros, and then she heads back with all that info, you know, do you think that's something that will become, you know, of consequence?
I feel like the three things that she's always told to go collect and give to the kindly man, most of them are kind of just useless, like it's just gossip and stuff. So I wouldn't say that's super essential information, but I do agree with you that Braavos is, yeah, this ultimate meeting point where many characters are heading to. We additionally know Harris Swift is coming to for something, for gold, to deal Iron with Bank. The Iron Bank, yes.
Yeah, and then along with that we get, you know, it's, who is it, Wrath, like, that appears in the Mercy chapter?
Yeah, Wrath the Sweetling.
And isn't, like, Maren Trant going to be traveling with Harris Swift, too? So there's a decent amount of people coming to Arya that are on her list.
Oh, yeah, indeed. I just wonder, because it seems like, you know, Stannis getting money from the Iron Bank and talk of Daenerys and her dragons and all the information that seems to leak back to King's Landing in whispers or in rumors that, you know, they're not sure what to do with. Arya seems to be there in Braavos with all this info, you know, at her fingertips. I wonder if she, you know, the story is going to make use of that. Like, she heads back, you know, let's say she heads back to Stannis and he is aware now of all these things. Or maybe she uses that info for some reason. I don't know. I just thought it's curious that she's there. And now, thanks to this big reveal that we all thought we knew, but she could head back as soon as Wins, as herself, playing herself.
Ooh, okay, yeah, I got that slightly wrong. Fake Arya might not be going to Braavos.
Oh, okay, well.
But still, Justin Massey will be there.
It could happen, as in, if they get there, find Jon's dead, and they're like, okay, we need to get the hell out of here, and they just take her with them. Could still happen.
Right, there's a lot of key pieces of information that she could find out between John's death and fake Arya being a thing. Like, just hearing about that information could affect the decisions that she makes.
Yeah, there's just forward. So much rich potential from these interactions that just makes me think has to happen.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, similar to Dany's storyline. I think it's likely that Arya could be on her way back to Westeros by the end of Winds as well.
We can only hope.
Right, yeah. This is that's kind of the hope for moving the story along so that he can finish it in 7 books and doesn't require an 8th, because I don't know, there's maybe a 5% chance he can that we'll get Dream of Spring, but like it's like almost a 0% chance that we would get 8 books.
Yeah, not in our lifetime, no.
All right, everyone, thanks for joining me for part 2 of the Feast recap here. We got a nice little conversation here about Sansa and Arya, through some Arianne in the middle there. Join us next time for part 3, where we'll cover the much-needed Brienne and Greyjoy chapters as well, and maybe a little bonus in there as well. All right, thanks, everyone.
Bye, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
Bye, Matt. Thank you.
So I would have actually really liked if Sansa's Winds of Winter chapter was at the end of A Feast for Crows. I feel like that just shows so much character growth, and I just really like the chapter. How do you think that would have changed Feast if we'd got that instead of the Harry the Heir chapter? Or rather, Littlefinger revealing who Harry the Heir is as a conclusion.
I liked it. I think it sets her up to... The stage is set for her to arise and start playing the game. And I think it was a good ending. I mean, and it obviously made me want to know more and spend, as Bina said, far too many hours thinking about what's going to happen with Harry the Heir and Sansa. And also, how the hell Harry the Heir is the heir. That is one complex motherfucking lineage that you had to figure out to get there.
To listen to it like 4 times to understand exactly whose grandkid he was.
Jesus,
yeah, it's complex.
It's even reading it on the wiki, it's like, okay, hang on, gotta draw this out.
Yeah, exactly. I think the way Feast ended, we are pretty much sure Robin Arryn is a dead man, either by natural causes or of Littlefinger's little cocktail, which I still haven't figured that out. But if he does go, then Harry the Heir, and then I guess if Sansa does get him, or get with him, then she becomes a person of consequence. So to answer your question about how it would have felt if you ended with the Feast chapter, the Winds of Winter chapter versus Feast. I think with Feast, it's a question, like what happens now if Littlefinger's plan comes to fruition? And so you hold your breath waiting to see how that plays out. Or with the Winds chapter, it says that, you know, she's going to do this. Can she pull it off? As opposed to, you know, will Littlefinger succeed in his plan for her? Maybe that's the difference, I think. Because the Winds chapter, you get the feeling that she's got this kind of, like, you're not worried whether or not she'll succeed. You're just like, oh, she knows what she's doing, kind of, right?
Yeah, I would agree. There is a lot more ambiguity with the ending of a Feast. And I guess the Winds chapter, it does feel like a new chapter of Sansa's life. So maybe it does belong in Winds better.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, that is tough, kind of thinking about rearranging this, you know, structurally, where George seemed very particular in kind of the chapters he ended Feast on, where everything is kind of a, there are a lot of like major moments and reveals in that, whether it's Sansa's or Princess in the Tower, or Arya going blind, Brienne up on the noose, like there's, so, you know, Cersei getting in prison. There's a lot of that where, it seems like it would be hard to, for a lot of the storylines to include another chapter at the end of them, and include that in Feast.
Got to end with those cliffhangers, you know.
Yeah.
keep waiting and wanting more. Yeah.
Yeah. Keep us wanting more and then not delivering.
Well, that's the point, you know. Delayed. What's the saying? Like. A delayed, no, I don't know what the saying is, but just keep us wanting, you know?
Right, that's, yeah, what, just unfortunately this isn't a weekly TV show.
Unfortunately it's not, we'd be out of business. So since we are delving into Feast, into Winds a little, she's currently on her way to Storm's End, right? Or King's Land fire Storm's End. Do you think maybe she is going to be the new POV or the person we see young Aegon's story through? Because if she does merge with that group, maybe that becomes Dorne's plot or Dorne's main projection through the story. I don't know if that becomes relevant or that becomes important moving on. But for Arianne on her own, like it seems like her main concern when we meet her is resolved at the end of Feast, right? She has her father. She has her father's trust. She's all good. But now she provides this insight into what Dorne is planning for, you know, the Seven Kingdoms.
Right. I mean, now she has to prepare to be Dorne's ruler at this point, because kind of as we can kind of see from the Watcher in Dance, like Dorne probably doesn't have very much time left given his illness. Arianne's journey going forth is to step up and be prepared to take his place. I'm not confident that, or I'm very worried that we're likely to see a rather unhappy conclusion to Dorne's plotting in here, but for sure their overall goal is to join with the Targaryens and oust the Lannisters and, you know, probably the Tyrells too. But yeah, Arianne is basically going as an envoy to meet with young Griff and all that. But for like her second chapter and the second preview chapter of hers, I believe they hear that young Griff has taken Storm's End, so that's where she's heading now.
I had a little theory, I think about, so you see Arianne's plot, obviously, to crown Marcella, and the person who told was Ellaria Sand, Oberyn's paramour, because the ultimate ending of the plot was to take Marcella to Hellholt, and Ellaria Sand's father is Harmon Ulla, the Lord of Hellholt. So if he was aware, I mean, he must have been aware, or one of them must have been aware that this is where it was going to ultimately end. And she is averse, we only find this out in Dance, but it's relevant. I mean, she's against revenge and she's frightened for her children. So I thought that could be a cool possibility.
I don't think Alaria or any of the Ullers knew. The way Ariane always thinks about it is it's just the seven who made the journey. It is an interesting question. Were Myssela and Ariane just going to rock up at Hell Holt and be like, hey, what's up? Here's the new queen.
I think so.
I've always thought from a geographical perspective, the only one of the seven that she's going to encounter, Ariane, is Silver Santigar, who was on Estamont. So just from, convenience, it's going to be Silver who was the betrayer, so they can resolve this issue.
Yeah, because it's a nagging one.
I don't know. George likes to make us wait, you know, the whole who murdered John Arryn. We had to wait until Storm.
I know. 3 books. Jeez.
I don't know if it's going to be anyway, isn't it? I mean, like, the book started off as a murder mystery, Game of Thrones, and it's all irrelevant. It makes it quite hard for me to go back and read not just that book, but particularly watching the show, because so much of it that you were invested in first time round, which is cracking whodunit, and it's just like, it doesn't matter. That's not what these books are about.
It was really just the entry point into the series.
Yeah, just like Ned going down Blacksmith's Road trying to figure out if Gendry's got black hair. I mean, it's just like, whatever.
Yeah.